Welcome to Coach on the Rise, the podcast for all coaches of all sports. This podcast is a True North Sports production with the simple purpose of building a community of coaches who want to learn together, grow together, and support each other. If you'd like to learn more about True North Sports, please look for our info in today's show notes. Thank you for joining us, and now on to our show.
Hey there, welcome to episode 6. I'm your host for today's episode, Teresa Beckman. And it's really great to be with you. Listen, this is a bonus episode, and it's going to be fairly short and sweet. It's with an amazing guest, though. John Gordon is a best-selling author several times over. He's written books that coaches have used as, you know, framework for their seasons all over the country, for sure, probably all over the world. Books like The Energy Bus, Training Camp, and, of course, my all-time favorite, You Win in the Locker Room First. So I'm really excited to bring this conversation to you. Now, listen, it happened about a year ago, maybe leading into the first annual Camp Elevate. So if you hear some references that are a little confusing, that's why. But there's so many gold nuggets in it, we just had to get it out to you. So as a reminder, speaking of Camp Elevate, it's going to be held on the campus of University of Colorado at Colorado Springs, May 29th through the 31st. It's coming up. And what's coming up even quicker is the early bird rate registration deadline. If you want to save a pretty good chunk of change, $100, you got to go get to the website and claim your seat today. And don't forget, if you're an alumni of Camp Elevate that happened last year at Grand Valley State University in Michigan, or if you're an alumni or currently enrolled in the Coach on the Rise Academy, or if you were in the ACIP program, you get an even more special rate. So for more information on all of that, visit the website, www.truenorthsports.net. And now, on to the main conversation.
So John, first, I just want to say thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. So we have an event coming up called Camp Elevate. As you know, I work with coaches of all sports. Men, women, does not matter. We basically address the profession of coaching, not the sport you coach.
Right.
And I'm very passionate about this, and that I really do believe that we need to train and develop our coaches, but also support them in this profession. And so part of the reason I wanted to talk to you a little bit is I know you've worked with a ton of coaches as well. And so I want to, as we get into this interview a little bit, I want to ask you some of the questions and things you've noticed when you've been working with coaches. Would you mind, John, because I know like some people may not know your life story. And one of the things we talk with our coaches a lot about is how much their life story impacts their coaching philosophy or their life philosophy, or, you know, and many of them don't even know what that life story is on a conscious level and how it is affecting them. How did you get to where you are, and how has that impacted your life work?
I've always been an athlete. I played sports ever since I was, you know, a little kid. I also, played football in high school, lacrosse in high school, basketball in high school, but I ultimately played lacrosse in college. I played at Cornell University. And so I've always thought of the world in terms of athletics and sports, and it's just a big part of who I am. But I never thought I would be working with all these sports teams. After college, I went, you know, into the business world. I opened up some restaurants. I went to go work for .com. I started a nonprofit. We raised money for youth-focused charities. I had a whole lifetime in my 20s. But it was great training ground to, you know, do the work I do now, to understand different businesses, understand the different challenges that different leaders and organizations face. But ultimately, around 29, 30 years old, my life started to fall apart. And my wife and I were fighting all the time. I was really scared about the future. I was allowing the stress to get to me. And I was just so full of fear and doubt. And ultimately, I remember just praying and just saying, what am I born to do? Why am I here? Why am I so miserable? Because I really was miserable. And I guess I should say the reason why I had that epiphany or that moment was because my wife gave me an ultimatum. She said, change, or basically you're off the bus. So I had to change. And interestingly enough, I'm now doing the work that I needed to learn myself. I needed to become more positive. I needed to become a better father. I needed to become a better husband. And so I started to research all these ways I could be more positive. I started to study positive psychology. This was the emerging field of positive psychology at the time. It wasn't like it is now. It was just beginning. And I started to research all of it. I started to write about the things that I was doing. Ultimately, that led me to write a book called The Energy Bus. And after writing that book, different coaches and teams started to read this book. I started to be invited to speak to them. I started to think about the challenges they were facing. I thought more about teams. I thought more about leadership. And ultimately, I just said ultimately like a bunch of times, but then that led me to do the work that I do now. So it really started out of my own negativity, my own desire to be a more positive person, the desire of my wife to have a more positive husband, and me willing to change, to realize that I wasn't the man that I wanted to be. And every day since then, it's been about growing, getting better every day. So I see my life as where I'm a work in progress, trying to get better myself, but I'm also trying to improve others and help others get better for them.
Like when you dive into that a little bit deeper around your willingness to change and what got you to that point, it's kind of like, it's a courageous act, you know, to change or be willing to change or to really look at what you're doing as not working. And it takes some courage. And I think, can you talk about that a little bit? Like, you know, where some people, like they really have to fall to their knees, you know, like they get a 2x4 up against their head eventually, you know?
Well, that was me. I mean, I had to really fall to my knees. I had to surrender. And so many people, they just have the pride and the ego that they're not willing to look at themselves. They have this wall around them. They have this mask they just try to perpetuate rather than looking within, realizing that they have flaws, realizing that they can be better, and then being willing to change and grow in that process. But you know what's great? I hear now from so many coaches that have read The Energy Bus or read Training Camp or read one of my books that inspired them to change. They see that they need to change within themselves. They read a story and it really brings to life, you know, what they're doing right, but also what they're doing wrong. So I love that there's so many coaches out there that are being courageous as well and willing to take the step to get better. I love when I hear from a coach that said, you know, I was all about screaming and yelling. I was quite negative, but I really worked on being a more positive coach. I worked on really encouraging my team, developing relationships with them. And that's why I had to go through my journey. I had to go through my test, obviously, to share a testimony. We hear that all the time. I had to have my mess to share a message. And it's all about what you're willing to do with it. And if I wasn't willing to change, I wouldn't have been able to help others. So I believe it all starts with everyone looking within themselves and saying, okay, how can I get better? My wife, even when we had, you know, young kids, she said to me, you know, there's some things you can do better as a, you know, as a dad. And I said, okay, tell me, I'm open. Make me better. I said that, make me better.
He was like,
really? I'm like, yeah, go ahead. And 3 hours later, she shared all the things I could do better. I'm just kidding. It was like 20 minutes. But it could have been 3 hours. But uh-huh. I listened. I took it to heart. Some things I didn't agree with, but some I did. I did a few of the things and it made a difference.
Why do you think, like so many coaches have read The Energy Bus? Why do you think so many coaches resonate with that book? Like, I know I loved it because of the simplicity of the message and the, why do you think it resonates so much with so many people? I mean, it's really one of your best-selling books, don't you think? I mean, is it one of your best-selling books?
Oh yeah, it sells more than all the others combined. So yeah. It's sold over a million copies now, something I never imagined. So I would say, you know, one, I never expected it to do what it's doing. It's been amazing even for me to see, you know, as a writer, you never think your work's going to get out there like that, but I love it. But I do think I understand why now, and it is the simplicity of it. It's also about a guy who's going from negative to positive, and we can all resonate and relate to this guy who's dealing with struggles and adversity. And ultimately, you know, the main character, you know, George represents the challenges that we all face. Can we take the lessons we learn on the bus and bring them to the work that we do? Can we overcome all the negativity, the adversity, the challenges to ultimately define ourselves and our team's success? And it's the fact that every one of us will have to overcome all those things to ultimately be our best and react the best in others. So that is, you know, it resonates with people, but also it's about the fact that there's negativity and energy vampires that he has to face. And it's something that we all have to do, especially coaches. They always deal with negativity in their teams. And so that really speaks to coaches, that language of energy vampires and negativity. But if you really think about it too, I didn't realize I was doing this, but it really encompasses every key part of being a leader, being a human being, in terms of enjoy the ride, love your passengers, drive with purpose, staying positive, dealing with negativity, having a vision of where you're going. All these rules are really central to life. Someone told me that the book Think and Grow Rich, that it had all these principles, and the Energy Bus actually has every one of those principles of that book, except it adds one more that Think and Grow Rich didn't have, and that's love. And Think and Grow Rich, everybody mentioned in that book, everyone profiled, all their relationships actually suffered. And even though they had a lot of wealth, their personal lives were big failures, unfortunately. And so by adding love to it, didn't know I was doing that, it really goes to the heart of being a true success about relationships and investing in others and what really lasts, what really lives on.
I mean, that's so true. I mean, that's part of that's the big piece of what I really loved about it, pardon the pun, but yeah. The other, as you've traveled around, John, you know, a lot of people have used that energy bus as the framework for their season. What are some of the cool ways that you've seen people use it? Like, I know you've got, like, and we'll get back to this, but you have a ton of resources on your website where people can implement the energy bus and use it in their programs. But what are some cool ways that you've seen some teams do it within their structure?
Sure. Well, one thing I've realized is that the genius is never on stage, and the genius is not the writer. The genius is always the reader and the audience. It's always amazing what those leaders do with the book. So I've learned from so many of these leaders. I am so fortunate that I get to work with a lot of these teams and a lot of these coaches and leaders, because here I am learning from the best of the best, what they do, what works, what doesn't. And I'm able to take all this information in and then be able to share with others. I'm like a student first and a teacher second, like a professor of positivity that is really, and teamwork, that is learning all this information and then able to really distill it down to what makes a difference. So I can go to any team now. It's amazing. And I can actually see what's good, what's bad, what the issues are. I mean, like a doctor starts to see patterns of illnesses. I can see patterns of dysfunction. I can see where teams have success. So it's something that I've been very fortunate to see and learn from. What I've seen most, I mean, just in terms of coaches will have the players read the book. They'll discuss it. I love one team had every week they would have a different group on the team. They paired them up into twos, and each group, each pair would share one of the rules with the rest of the team. So they would bring those principles to life. They would do a skit or a movie scene or a rap, you name it. They picked a way to share the rule. That was really cool. Other ones have, you know, basically gone through the principles. They put up signs that say no energy vampires allowed. I mean, University of Georgia did that years ago. Mark Rick put up a sign, no energy vampires allowed. Anytime one of the players was being a vampire, they took the player's picture from the media guy. They put it on the vampire on the wall. You know, I don't always recommend that, but it was really a great thing for that team. No one wanted to be on the wall. They lost the first two games, but then they won the next 10. Make it to the SEC championship. So that was a great example. I love when teams combine one word with the energy bus. So they'll have each person pick a word and they put that word on front of their bus, because it's really about a fleet of buses all moving in the right direction. We're all drivers of our bus, but then it's also this image of one bus where we're all on one bus together.
Awesome. Well, tell me a little bit about your new book, The Power of Positive Leadership.
Sure. Well, that's basically everything that I've learned since the Energy Bus has been out. So since 2007, we're talking 10 years now of working with teams, working with leaders, working with companies. So I have all this great information and understanding of what it means to be a positive leader. So I put together a framework on positive leadership. One, this book is how and why positive leaders make a difference, because pessimists don't change the world. Critics write words, but they don't write the future. Naysayers talk about problems, but they don't solve them. It's the positive leaders that ultimately change the world. They believe in a brighter and better future. So they rally people. They take action in order to create it. So I explain the science behind it, the research behind it. Also, just a lot of case studies of how positive leaders have transformed their teams and how they've changed the world. So that's one part of it. The other part is a framework for developing leaders or any leader who wants to be a better leader, who wants to be a more positive leader. So I put together this framework on what it means to be a positive leader and how to implement it. So positive leaders drive positive cultures. Positive leaders create and share a positive vision. Talk about how. Positive leaders lead with optimism, belief, and positivity. Talk about the leaders that have done that. Give examples and then how you can do it too. Positive leaders transform or remove negativity. So they confront it. They hopefully transform it. They can't transform it. They remove it. So I get very practical. Since the energy bus has been out, I get a lot of questions about dealing with negativity. So you get really practical and give ideas on, okay, here's how you deal with negativity. Here are the most common questions I get and share that. Positive leaders also build united and connected teams. They develop great relationships and they build great teams. Positive leaders also lead with purpose. They pursue excellence. So it's not about just being positive just to have fun, right? We're being positive so we can work towards something because we want to create something great. So positive leaders pursue that excellence. Probably one of my favorite chapters in that book talking about that. They're demanding without being demeaning. And then positive leaders also have grit and they don't give up. They keep on fighting. They keep on moving forward. We see that all the time. And that's the framework of this book and of what positive leaders do. Excited for really a lot of coaches and leaders to read it. I really think it's going to have a great impact. I wrote it like you would in the locker room first. I had a lot of people who really liked that style. I've written a lot of fables. So now I'm writing a couple of non-fables. I'll get back to writing fables again. But I think for these two books, it's good to write this way. And then I'm going to follow up with the power of a positive team and talk about what it means to be a great team and build a great team. So I'm going to sort of take Win in the Locker Room and my hard hat book, 21 Ways to Be a Great Teammate. Those are going to be a combination of those two with a lot of great stories and things I've learned and a framework as well.
Very cool. Very cool. And, you know, John, when you look at working with different people, different coaches, let's just focus on coaches right now. And then I'm going to ask you about athletes. But when sure. you, of all these years of working with different teams and looking at different coaches and their different styles, what kind of patterns have you noticed where coaches, and I'm going to use the word suffer, where their greatest suffering is in this profession?
One, it's that it's lonely at the top. Mm-hmm. You are a leader. It's can be very lonely because it's hard for you to share what's really going on with your players, to share sometimes even with your assistant coaches. So I find that coaches tend to be very isolated. And that's what I try to be. I try to be an encouragement, someone they can talk to, someone they can confide in, and someone who can help them work through their challenges and their problems. So for me, I see that often, that it can be very lonely for a leader and a coach at the top. I think also coaches suffer with, you know, the expectations of the outside world and all the pressure from the parents, from the media, from their administration. So there's so much pressure more than ever. More coaches are getting fired than ever for having even subpar, you know, not even bad seasons, but a little subpar. You don't succeed in 1 year, you're gone. It's like there's no time to even build a program. It's kind of a little crazy. So I find that it's really hard for coaches to focus on what really matters most in the midst of all of that.
Yeah, no, I totally would agree with that for sure. And, you know, the interesting thing too is I feel like the way things are set up for coaches, and I'm not saying bad things about the sport coaches associations or whatnot. It's just, I feel like it's even more isolating when the only people you associate with are coaches within your sport, because that makes it even less safe to ask for help or to reach out. And I don't know why that is. It's that competition piece where I don't want anyone to see my cards, or I don't want to see anyone to see that I'm struggling. And I think the other thing too, John, and maybe this isn't at the elite level, but maybe it is another common theme. and tell me if you've experienced this, is I also think it's a lot of managing that self-regulation around self-doubt and just confidence, period, in knowing what your philosophy is, what do you stand for, and being confident and standing in it. It's hard to teach confidence.
I think that's great in terms of what coaches deal with, because they do deal with challenges. They do deal with their own self-doubt, fear, and negativity. And again, that's why I wrote this Power Positive Leadership, because it really is almost like having me coach them and encourage them as a coach, like, no, you can do this. Know what you stand for. Believe in what you believe. Continue to work towards it. Have grit. Stay on the right path. Continue to do the right things. David Cutcliffe told me that when Duke was 3-9, back-to-back seasons, he didn't feel bad because he knew they were doing things the right way. He felt good about what they were doing because they were doing everything they could to be successful, and they were doing things the right way. He knew success was going to come, and it did. A couple years later, they were in 3 bowl games, you know, in a row. So 3 years, bowl games back to back. So that's a big part of being a coach, is staying true to who you are, or knowing who you are, knowing what you stand for, knowing what you believe, and then continually doing things the right way. You may not have success immediately. It's going to take time. So you have to stay true to that. But a lot of coaches, as you said, may not even know what they stand for. Now, here's the other thing. A lot of coaches don't reach out to other coaches. They don't learn from other coaches. But what I have found is that most coaches really are generous. Maybe it's the great ones, but I seem to meet a lot of coaches that are very generous with their time, always sharing with other coaches, but they're always learning from other coaches as well. You'd be surprised how the best of the best coaches are always finding ways to make their team better. Maybe that's why they're the best of the best.
Exactly.
I find that I meet a lot of high school coaches who think they know it all, who think they have all the answers. And so they're the least likely to reach out. And yet you have these superstar coaches like Bill Belichick going to meet with college and high school coaches saying, hey, what's happening? What's new? What can I learn from them? And that you may have some that think, nah, I got this. I'm great. You know, big fish in a small pond kind of mindset that they have. They're not very humble and hungry. But I have learned that the best are always seeking ways to get better. And, you know, just the other day, for instance, you know, Michigan State's football coaches went to go visit Clemson's football coaches. You know, they have a, you know, brainstorm. They share ideas with each other. Most likely they're not going to play each other, but they still may in a bowl game. They still may at the end of the year if they're in the Final Four. You never know. And yet they're still sharing ideas because they're friends. They share ideas. And at the end of the day, it's about execution anyway.
Yeah, exactly. You still got to implement the ideas. You still got to, you know, you still got to make it work. So
yeah, Bill Belichick meets with Chip Kelly to pick his brain. Yeah, you just, there's a lot of sharing going on. There's a lot of coaches who get together and share. You know, Coaching U has great clinics where they come together in the basketball world to share. I think there needs to be more of that. And if you're doing that, that's awesome, because that's what's necessary.
Because I find that when I'm talking to coaches, they don't call me about how to, you know, implement a 2-2-1 full court press.
Right.
You know, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about their kid got busted for drugs, or, you know, they, you know, all those types of issues, like, and how do they move through conflict? Like, how are you a leader through conflict? Because I think a lot of coaches have a knee jerk reaction when a kid makes a mistake or they do something that's challenging for them and their program. And they really do need somebody that they can talk to and process, what's the next best thing I should do? What's the next best thing? How can I lead my team and my program through this conflict? Because it's not just the coach and that athlete going through this conflict. It's the whole program is affected by this conflict. And so how do I lead my whole program through it? Which, you know, I don't think coaches reach out enough. I wish they'd reach out. And that's what we're trying to implement, is a system of support that people can say, hey, what would you do in this situation? Or, hey, you know, I need some feedback. This is what I'm thinking. What do you think? Have you ever had to deal with this before? And I agree with you. I mean, the coaches that have been in it the longest, they seem to be the ones that reach out for the most help. And I think that's a really interesting detail in their lives, for sure.
I love it. I think the more support you could provide, the better.
I really appreciate your energy. So thank you.
Thanks, Sadie.
Thank you so much for listening in today. If this podcast has added value to your day, I just want to ask you to do a couple of things. Share it with a friend in the coaching world. And if you're so inclined, go ahead and subscribe to the podcast. The more people we can add to our tribe, the better it is going to be for every single one of us. As you head out to your day, just a quick reminder, to find out more information on Camp Elevate, go to truenorthsports.net. Or you can find us on Facebook by searching True North Sports. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope you will subscribe to Coach on the Rise so you don't miss a single episode. Also, we would be so grateful if you could take a minute to post a quick review of our podcast. Your review really helps us get the word out and grow our tribe so we can reach more coaches. Until next time, keep shining bright.